loudest weekend of the year is back, louder than life in Louisville, Kentucky, with the reunion of Slayer. Slipknot. Motley Crue. Korn. Judas Priest. Disturbed. Five Finger Death Punch. Breaking Benjamin. And Falling in Reverse. With Evanescence, The Offspring, Till Lindemann, A Day to Remember, Stained, Hailstorm, Gojira, Anthrax, and so many more. Over 150 bands, non-stop rock for 4 days on 5 stages. September 26th through 29th in Louisville, Kentucky. Passes on sale now as low as $10 down at louderthanlivefestival.com. Are you
ready? Don't go to sleep, mother. Don't go to sleep.
And do me a favor. Don't disturb my friend. He's dead tired.
Well, what the hell are you saying, Doss? You bruised half your body sleeping.
I sleep pretty hard.
Welcome to Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories.
Hey, it's Brian.
And hey, it's Murdoch, everybody. Welcome to Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories.
You know you can get involved in the show. It's easy. It's wearethestoryguys@gmail.com. We got a note this week from Melvin. He says, hey, fellas, is it true that Liam Gallagher was harassing Bon Jovi by calling him repeatedly and telling him his music sucks? Does sound like something he would do. Love the show. Keep telling stories.
Thanks for the letter. We've been doing a lot of heavy stuff lately.
Yeah, we have.
So
yeah, we have.
This feels like a great palate cleanser, great idea to talk about Liam Gallagher being a jerk to anyone is funny.
It is funny. And I will say, too, that remember, at the root of this show, it's about rumor and innuendo. And so sometimes we're going to investigate just stuff we've heard or seen on the internet to try to get to the bottom of it. And that's what today's show is. A little less history lesson, a little more rumor and innuendo.
We've done at least one deep dive on the dysfunction of Oasis in the back catalog of the show. But we've never really spent a lot of time dealing with Shot Through the Heart with Bon Jovi.
I love Bon Jovi. 30th birthday was me watching Bon Jovi with my wife and with our mutual friend Todd Schumacher and some other people. And we were at this cool venue and they brought a cake out for me. It was freaking great. Great memory. Let's start here, though. I want to ask you this. Was Bon Jovi, or John Bon Jovi, the person, do you think he was too hot to be taken seriously by rock and roll guys?
You mean like metal guys?
Yeah, like too good looking
guys. Yeah, do you remember the Runaway video?
Uh-huh.
Yes, he was. He was gorgeous. Like, not like Sebastian Bach gorgeous, but he was good looking.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. I've always thought he got less respect because he leaned into the good looking thing, right? He didn't run away from it at all. Do you know about his first professional recording gig?
No, I don't know. No.
Okay, so his cousin, you might know this, Tony Bongiovi, his cousin owned a legit recording studio. And this, the recording studio we could probably do a whole episode on the recording studio because it's seen a lot of stuff. I think it's called the Power Station, not to be confused with the supergroup. So John, when he was
in the studio,
right. When he was young, he would run errands for the studio staff. And one day his cousin is in the middle of working this gig and he's making the Star Wars Christmas album. And he's in need of someone to sing on the banger track called R2-D2, We Wish You a Merry Christmas.
No fucking way. I know what this record is, but I haven't heard it.
That is the first recorded output from John Bon Jovi. Now understand, he had been performing at bars long before this.
Right. And he was in bands at 13. Mm-hmm. And it takes up until the early 80s when he records a demo of the song Runaway. By the way, you can't find the SNL clip of it, but on YouTube, but it's like on Vimeo, where Chris Kattan trying to audition for a video and they had an interpretive dance to the song Runaway. And I don't know how to make it funny at all. Anyway, so he made a demo for Runaway, a radio station put on a local music comp, which is what we used to do when we were younger.
I know, comps, man. Oh,
yeah.
Lost art of comps.
On the local comp. Right. It started to get some traction first in New York and then other places. But he doesn't really have a band. This is a demo that he has.
Yeah, so here's where the band that will become known as Bon Jovi starts to get put together. And there's a lot of really fun connections here. And I feel like to be true to the show and to be true to you as my best pal, I have to let you talk about the kiss of it all.
Oh, yeah. So in 81, Kiss started auditioning. All right. Kiss started auditioning guitar players. And one of them was Richie Sambora.
This is wild.
This is when Ace was just kind of falling apart. And so they had to get another one, another guitar player. Apparently, per first person story, the other guitar player, at least, well, there's more than one or two. Another guitar player apparently that was called to ask to audition was Yngwie Malmsteen.
No fucking way. Are you serious?
And this is a quote from Yngwie, and this is so good, I can't stand it. I remember once when I was living in Sweden and I got a phone call from Kiss. It was so funny because it was like, yeah, we hear that you are really, really hot. And I'm like, I don't know. It's quite cold here. Stuff like that. I didn't fucking get it at all. Then they asked me if I was at least 6 feet tall. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm 1 meter and 83 centimeters. I had no fucking idea what they meant at the time. There was a real communication problem there. End quote. That's the quote.
That's real?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He said that he got – Richie, I guess, actually did play, but Yngwie did not.
Yngwie just got really the call. Rehearse. So there's some stuff in the show notes if you want to go deep on that story because it is wild. But for simplification, I will just insert a Richie Sambora quote about the whole experience right here, and here it is. I didn't really know what I was doing back then, and I didn't really want the gig. They wanted someone to replace Ace, but I think they wanted someone who worshipped them. I liked their music, but I wasn't into them in a big way. I just thought it would be a good thing to go along and give it a go. I didn't feel like wearing any of their makeup. That's for sure.
Yeah, let's dress up like a kabuki in the kabuki makeup and run around and point and be, you're now the space alien. The other fun connection is that John Bon Jovi grew up with Dave Sabo from Skid Row. Oh, and a lot of people do know this maybe. And so in the early days, Dave actually plays with John in an earlier version of the band. And again, there's a whole episode riding there with New Jersey. Eventually, Skid Row will become their own band. And then Bon Jovi takes Skid Row out on their tour with them. And they make a deal that gets John and Richie paid once Skid Row gets big. And the guys in Skid Row didn't like any of that for sure.
There is a lot of stuff about this in Nothing But a Good Time, the book we talk about all the time on this show. So if you've never check that out, here's just yet another reason, but probably another episode worth of stuff. These wider connections aside, though, a band of pros is assembled to be in this band with John Bon Jovi as a centerpiece. And of course, his name is Bon Jovi. John wants to have a band name. He wants
He
wants to call this band Johnny Electric, which I gotta say, it's silly, but awesome. Like, I would listen to Johnny Electric, especially when I was younger, I would have.
It sounds like an amazing, like Johnny Quest and the Motherfuckers or something.
Yeah, it sounds like a cartoon a little bit. It sounds like something I would watch on Adult Swim.
Johnny Electric doesn't sound like a person. It sounds like a fictitious person.
So when Doc McGee's team, yes, I said Doc McGee, gets a hold of them, because this happens, they are convinced that the best way to move forward is to go with, I guess, like an Americanized version of Bon Jovi, and they make it Bon Jovi. And the reason they do that is mostly because they think it will make people think of Van Halen.
Right, right. You mentioned Doc McGee. He gets in the mix, and these guys get a couple albums out in the mid-80s with moderate success, but they haven't really become a household name. So Doc McGee, while he wasn't importing tons of marijuana in the United States, they decide together to hire a professional songwriter to help polish them up. Yeah. And man, this guy wrote a lot of songs of Bon Jovi.
Yeah, but they put that drug money to good use. So coupled with John's good looks, this is the other reason I think they get a lot of flack, right? And I'm stating that generally, right? But I just think that when you talk about Guns N' Roses or any other big hard rock influence of the 80s, you don't put Bon Jovi in the same category typically, especially if you're a dude from that time period. And I think that has to do with A, like I said, the good looks, and B, because they hired a pro to write the songs and it freaking works, but they're now very slick. These are not rock, you know, gnarly rock songs. No, these are very slick songs. To give you some perspective, will you read a few of the other songs that Desmond Child, the guy that they hire, what he writes in rock history?
Can I just do all the Kiss, a bunch of Kiss ones first?
Of course.
I, I Was Made for Loving You, Heaven's on Fire, Under the Gun, Who Wants to Be Lonely. He did all the ones around Asylum, too. All of that. But anyway, I Was Made for Loving You. So he did the disco hit. And then Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, I Hate Myself for Loving You. Aerosmith's Dudes Look Like a Lady. And Aerosmith's Angel. He also wrote Hide Your Heart, that both Ace and Kiss both record. And for Pete's sake, he wrote fucking Livin' La Vida Loca.
Yes.
That made Ricky Martin a star.
Yes, you heard that correctly. The guy who wrote Livin' apostrophe on a prayer, also wrote Livin' apostrophe right. La Vida Loca. Same person.
Those apostrophes are important when you're L-I-V-I-N,
Livin' on a prayer.
But Slippery When Wet, it's the third album with those big tunes. That is what makes them into a superstar band.
They become massive. They launch a big tour. They create a follow-up record called New Jersey. They do more touring around this. They become the first band officially sanctioned by the Soviet government to perform in the Soviet Union. And New Jersey becomes the first U.S. album released legally in the USSR. Just soak that in for a moment.
Right, which is crazy. And then they almost break up.
Yeah, that. They are just totally exhausted after two huge records, two big tours. They've basically been on the road nonstop for a year and a half. Classic stress and drama, intense high-stakes working relationships, right? So they just go their separate ways for a little bit.
And you can say a lot of things about Bon Jovi, but you can't call the guy dumb at all. The band makes the transition in the 90s, and they make this transition that a lot of bands are just murdered in the graveyard almost immediately. But like a lot of their contemporaries just kind of die off. Think about Warrant and think about Bon Jovi.
Think about
the
Winger.
The best two examples.
You know, we've talked about Winger fairly recently, right? And so it's this break after New Jersey that gets a lot of the credit, because a couple things happen here. One, they fire Doc McGee and they start their own management company. Two, Richie and John and David Bryan, who plays keyboards, all find their own projects to work on, and they start working with people in totally different genres, which is super cool.
Yeah. By the way, David Bryan has a Grammy and a Tony.
Oh,
just
shit.
Heads up. And number three, way before Metallica does it and made it cool, they go to therapy, sort of, kind of.
Yeah, John is on record as saying that they hired a mediator to get all the band's issues out in the open. This seems like a very good move on his part. It totally works. The band soldiers on strong on pop radio all the way through me being in high school, right? So all the way through the early 2000s, these guys are on top 40 radio. And I don't think it would have happened without this.
No. And then he got his hair cut.
that was such a big deal. I don't know if people like, didn't live through it, remember this, or have heard about this, but it was a big deal.
Kind of like when Metallica did it, but John Bon Jovi was a pop star.
So, quote, this is John. My hairstyle was on CNN. It was like, holy cow, John Bon Jovi cut his hair. I got tired of it. I look back at those pictures and I'm like, oh my God, look at all that hair.
Then to up the ante in terms of production work, they hire the guy who did, oh my gosh, how did we get to talk about Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood record? And, right, because that happened, that was 89. And then this producer also produced the Black Album for Metallica, so they hire Bob Rock. And that's for the record, Keep the Faith.
And this sort of helps them transition into the 90s. Like, they see, I mean, I think they saw what Bob did with Metallica. And so he helps them make this record, and then they make a greatest hits album, and then they record an album that's called These Days. So now we're at like roughly 1995. So let's pause here and figure out where Oasis figures into all of this.
So while Bon Jovi is reinventing themselves, Oasis is making a name for the first time. And that name is often synonymous with controversy and bad behavior.
So the question that's driving this today is, did Liam Gallagher harass John Bon Jovi? That's essentially what we're here to figure out. But to answer that, I think we have to establish a reason for why Liam Gallagher would feel the need to do that. I mean, I guess he could have just been doing it to be a punk, but what is there a feud that would have led to this? To be honest, the origins of the discontent between these two parties, murky at best.
You know, usually a few specific stories surface on what led them not to be getting along.
Right. There's like three stories that I was able to unearth, all three very hard to verify. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to lay them out in order that they supposedly happened. And then you and I are going to decide amongst ourselves if we think any of them are actually true.
Okay. Story one. Let's call this John feels disrespected by Oasis. I made that really diplomatic. Could have made that terrible. This is the most circulated on social media, I think. It centers around the idea that Oasis and Jon Bon Jovi by himself encountered each other for the first time while they were recording on Top of the Pops.
Top of the Pops! Top of the Pops! Of course, that is a British music show. Did you ever watch that? Did you ever catch that on cable or anything?
I mean, once I found out it was a thing, I started going back and watching a lot of it. The Nirvana one, by the way, Teen Spirit is great.
Oh, yeah, because they mess with the format, which also Oasis will do, which we'll talk about in a moment. This show runs forever, right? 64 to 2006. A musical performer each week. The first artist to be featured ever, Dusty Springfield. The last, Snow Patrol. And in between, almost everyone. Nirvana, Bon Jovi, Oasis included.
Everybody. Oasis does the show multiple times, and the second time they do it, which is 95, is the most famous because they do the opposite of Kurt Cobain, who actually does sing, but poorly when they do Teen Spirit. They lip sync, and then they do really dumb stuff and trade spots and instruments and just kind of make a mockery of the whole show itself.
But the first time they do it is June of 94, and this is the unattributed quote that seems like it is supposed to be Noel talking. Do you have that?
Yeah, I do. And this is funny as crap. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, to our podcast. I hope you enjoyed this quote from apparently from Noel Gallagher. Another funny thing about the first Top of the Pops was we were sat in a dressing room and Jon Bon Jovi was across the way, right? Because he had some solo stuff out. And this is genius, man. This is why I love our kid. Our door was open, as it always was. We had the Ghetto Blaster on in the middle, and everyone was having a drink, and he came in. Hey, are you guys Oasis, right? Yeah. And he had a copy of Rolling Stone. We just had our first write-up in Rolling Stone, and he said, you guys are in Rolling Stone. And he hands it to Liam. And he said, so when you get to the States, you can say that Jon Bon Jovi gave you your first Rolling Stone. And as he's walking around, Liam turned and went, who's he?
So is this a true story? I mean, and that's a good question. Here's what I've been able to verify, all right? First of all, we're just looking at how the story's laid out, seeing what we can prove is true. Both bands played Top of the Pops in 94. Now, the episodes aired several months apart, but that doesn't mean they weren't filmed at the same time.
Right. And from knowing a bit about Top of the Pops, they typically did put several bands on rotating sound stages and record like in chunks.
Okay.
Kind of like Wheel of Fortune, but not really.
kind of like what's the Jules Holland show?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that, right?
Later with Jules, yeah. Right? There's also a link in the show notes just to check it out. That's a Reddit thread from people describing what Top of the Pops tapings were really like from personal experiences, and they sound like they're really fun anyway.
Yeah, they really do. There are a few reasons I don't think this is a real story, though. So first, the September 94 performance of Bon Jovi is not a solo performance. The full band Bon Jovi is with him. And this story specifically mentions that he was supporting his solo work, which is an odd detail. That would have likely been earlier in the decade, because by mid to late 94, they were back together and getting ready for, I think These Days was on the verge of coming out. Secondly, this all centers around Oasis being in Rolling Stone. Now, if you read that carefully, he just says in Rolling Stone. He doesn't say on the cover. Now, the cover doesn't happen until 96. That's when Oasis gets their first cover. There is a write-up in May of 95, but I was not able to verify that there was much about Oasis and Rolling Stone in 94.
Right. So maybe somebody was smoking something. Could this story be true and there's details wrong?
The details are fuzzy. I mean, I guess if you move the story into 95, most of the story would line up because Oasis was on Top of the Pops in August, Bon Jovi was on in June, but you still have the full band Bon Jovi performing, and this wouldn't be the first time Oasis had done the show, and that's a part of the quote is, it was the first time we did the show. This would have been the second if it was in 95. But regardless of that, there is not a lot out there other than some Twitter and Facebook noise to actually source this quote at all. Like, I can't find what interview or what video show or anywhere that Noel said this or who he said it to. So that makes it a little sketchy. Wait, like, what do you think? Do you think the story, let's just make a decision. Do you think it's true or false?
My gut says false.
Yeah, I'm going to say false too. So,
okay.
First story, we're going to say we don't think it's true.
False.
It's one of the largest rock and roll music festivals in the country, and we've got your tickets. Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories is sending you back. We're sending you again to Louder Than Life Music Festival, and we're, you know, we want you to have plenty of time to plan. So as they drop the lineup, we're dropping wristbands. They could be yours, and all you have to do is send us an email. It's wearethestoryguys@gmail.com. That's simple. Send us the email and tell us your best, favorite, funniest, weirdest, I don't know, just tell us something about you at a music festival, because we tell stories on this podcast. We're about telling stories, so keep telling stories, and in the meantime, grab yourself some wristbands to Louder Than Life 2024, 4 days of music in Louisville, Kentucky. Lineup is huge. Check it out in the show notes. Get ready to rock out with us. Murdoch and I will be there. We'll probably see you. We just need you to win these wristbands, so go ahead. Take care of it. Send us an email. wearethestoryguys@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Story two.
Story two, we will call Bon Jovi Gets Offended When Oasis Turns Down Their Tour. And this gets us back to 1995, as Bon Jovi is embarking on that tour and that album these days, right? This is a European tour.
Yeah. And how crazy in 1995 that Oasis needs an opening act, and for 20 dates in Europe, they choose Van Halen.
Oh yeah, no, so no. You mean Oasis or Bon Jovi needs an opening act?
Oh yeah, Bon Jovi. Sorry, I was thinking about them both. I don't know how I mixed up the two British guys and the guy from New Jersey. See, this is just old age. I give up with this. But anyway, so Van Hagar, right? And it's such an unusual pairing with them being an opening act. But there had been a long-standing rumor that Oasis was asked to at least be on the shows and maybe just be at the Wembley show, and they turned down the chance.
Now, this rumor seems to mostly live on message boards and fan sites. Here's a fan comment. Quote, I think John said many times he was a big fan of Oasis and wanted them to open for Bon Jovi in 1995. Liam or Noel turned him down, saying, don't get me wrong, John Bon Bon is a nice bloke, but his music sucks balls, or something like that. They've never been best friends since.
I'll say it now, out loud. I want John Bon Jovi to induct Oasis into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame if they actually get the nomination this year.
So the problem is, I can't find any proof of this having happened either. And just to do a little bit of digging around it, the Wembley show was on June 25th of 1995. And I will say, the Wembley show is on YouTube. And there have been a whole bunch of recreation of taking tape and like taking audio and video and syncing them together. Anyway, it's good. It's in the show notes. If you just want to watch these guys destroy Wembley, it's pretty neat. Now, if you know Oasis history, June 23rd, just 2 days before, June 23rd, 1995, is the Oasis show at Glastonbury, the festival. And that becomes recorded and becomes pretty noteworthy in their catalog.
Right. And it's a very famous show in the history of the band, too. So looking up the capacity of those two events, Wembley is like 90,000-ish. Uh-huh. Glastonbury, they throw 80,000, that number in there. If for those of you that don't know, Glastonbury is a festival in Europe, and it doesn't mean 80,000 people actually watching.
Right.
It's just that's maybe the attendance for that day. But it's worth pointing out, just to make clear, that even in the mid-90s, Oasis was enormous in different parts of the globe.
Now, this idea that John Bon Jovi liked Oasis's music is what I find the most interesting about all of this, because it seemed like if that's true, if these message board folks are like, yeah, dude, I know John said in interviews he liked Oasis, that's got to be out there somewhere. And so I started looking, and when I look for that, what comes up more often is a connection to John's second solo album, Destination Anywhere. And that comes up because reviewers can't help but notice that there's a lot of Britpop on Destination Anywhere.
Yeah, and he starts trying to do more acting in the 90s, if you remember that. And he gets this role that shoots in London, and when he's there, he starts writing songs in his trailer, and that's how with the songs of Destination Anywhere, where they come from.
Yeah, this is an actual quote from John. He says, "The Britpop thing having just started, I was listening to the radio in my trailer. The Manics, Manic Street Preachers, shout to our episode not too long ago about them. Black Grape, Blur, Pulp. I went, whoa, what is this? Those songs, Common People, Designed for Life, beautiful and great lyrics. I thought this was so cool."
And he actually gets Black Grape's producer to do Destination Anywhere with him.
But so it's interesting, though, that in that particular quote, there's a name that's conspicuously absent.
Yeah, he mentions Blur. He doesn't mention Oasis.
What does happen over the years after this record, Destination Anywhere? That's 97, by the way. Bon Jovi gets accused of ripping off Oasis directly. After These Days, the band waits 5 years for album number 7. So from 95 to 2000. That's a pretty big gap. And the record that comes out in 2000 is a record called Crush, which, side note, goes on to be a huge record for them. And again, I will point out, these guys make it from 80s hair all the way through the turn of the century, still getting played on Top 40 radio, which is remarkable. Very few bands do that. On this album is a song called Captain Crash and the Beauty Queen from Mars. Quite a title. And it does have some similarities to an old Oasis B-side called Stay Young.
And for us to open up about our nerdiness to you, here is a message board speculation about that specifically.
This is why you're here. But don't be surprised. Yeah.
Think about that band, whatever you want. But it becomes obvious that Captain Crash is a direct ripoff from the Oasis B-side Stay Young, a song Oasis didn't think was good enough for their album, and a song that has better vocals and guitar work than Captain Crash has. Man, that person does not like Shot Through the Heart, and you're to blame.
Well, it's funny, too, because they're talking about this being a B-side. Not only is it a B-side, it's a B-side from the Be Here Now period, which I don't know if we have any Oasis scholars in the house, but this is a era of Oasis that is not looked upon kindly.
Right.
So this is funny. I mean, this is their critical low point. That's where Oasis is, while Bon Jovi is discovering Britpop and starting to emulate it. So what's our verdict on story number two? True or false?
So I'm going to go out on a limb, because I remember at one point Oasis went out on tour with Ryan Adams.
Really?
And I'm thinking,
like with Whiskey Town?
No, with Ryan Adams. And it might have been a little later.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but I'm thinking that they just didn't want it. I'm thinking this is true.
Okay. Okay. I still have trouble. I don't think it's necessarily false. I think the stories about it and about them outright refusing might be, or saying his music is terrible, that might be false. But did it happen? I could believe it. Now, that leads us to story number three. The story of Bon Jovi talking shit about Oasis in the press.
And I recall this when it happened, September 3rd, 2007. This was in the Irish Examiner. Singer John Bon Jovi has launched a scathing attack at British rockers Oasis and pop star Robbie Williams, insisting their music is so bad they couldn't fill a bar. He says of Williams, "That guy, he couldn't fill a bar. He couldn't even sell 500 tickets. Oasis couldn't fill a bar either. And they're full of themselves."
So close to a year later, John is doing an interview in Australia. Most of these conversations do not happen in the United States. Remember, Oasis is really, really big in Britain. And he is right. I mean, it's part of this quote saying that part of what he's getting at is that they're bigger in Britain than they are in the States, which, of course. And so most of this coverage happens in the Irish Examiner, and then this rebuttal happens in Australia. John's doing this interview. The Australian press asks him, "Hey, there was a quote from the UK where you slagged off Robbie Williams and Oasis saying they couldn't fill a club in the US. This is what John Bon Jovi says in response. "Of course, the English took it out of context," which I just think is a funny way to start that, because it's like, he's like, "Well, of course, the British people, they're just unreliable." But he says, "They were talking about the success they, Robbie and Oasis, have had in America. And I said they couldn't play a club there. I'm a huge Robbie fan. I buy all his records and I've seen him live, but he couldn't play a big venue in America. It's not a slag at him. It's like, look how screwed up the industry is. He can't play a club here, but he plays 3 Nebworths, which is an outdoor stadium, in the UK.
And I'd heard negative things about things that maybe Bon Jovi had done or said early in his career, but I generally had always heard that he was nice. So do we need to make a decision on whether this is true or not?
Yeah, I mean, this is documented in some actual newspapers. I mean, I think this happened.
I do too.
Yeah, and I think I buy the quote taken out of context because that Irish Examiner piece reads ridiculously. So this brings us to the question at the core of today's letter, which is, regardless whether or not any of this beef is real, did Liam start harassing Bon Jovi?
Yeah. And so poking around a little, we realized what led Elvin to write this letter. It was likely the fact that though this story has been around recently, it's reemerged on TikTok.
Yeah. Thanks, TikTok. Let me just read this quote that's been virally floating around. This is attributed to Jon Bon Jovi, just randomly. Like, you'll just see it, and it'll just have Jon Bon Jovi's name next to it. Liam Gallagher was giving me nuisance phone calls for over a decade. I have a problem with the fact that he calls it a nuisance phone call. But anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute.
I don't think that regular people call them
I don't think American people call. I think a British person would call it a nuisance phone call, maybe, but I don't think an American would. God knows how he got my number. He would ring at 3 or 4 in the morning just to tell me that my music was shit. Sometimes he would call me the bastard son of Richard Branson, which is weird.
It should be Bruce Springsteen.
And other times he would shout Lionhead down the phone until I hung up. In the end, I offered him $500 or $500,000. I don't know. I offered him a lot of money and begged him to stop. And he told me, quote, eat shit. And that is attributed on the internet in parentheses to Jon Bon Jovi.
So this is real? No.
I'm pretty confident that it is not real. I just don't think that's a real story. Well, okay, so couple of reasons I think this is suspicious. Beyond it just seeming like something that could not or would not last for 10 years. Like, that and the nuisance phone calls thing, right? So everywhere you see this, it's that quote, and it includes nuisance phone calls. Prank phone calls, I'd buy it. Nuisance phone calls, I don't think that's a thing Jon Bon Jovi would say. Looking for the root of this story, it seems to have just appeared in the last 4 or 5 years. I can't find a lot that goes back before like 2019, 2018 about this. And when it is launched, it's typically launched in one of a couple of places, either like a Reddit thread, which is where, you know, all truth lives, or on a message board, or, and this is pretty typical, it's put up as a screenshot of a tweet featuring dated pictures of the artist, but with no tweet attribution. So it just looks, you know, that look, right? The square look, like it's a tweet. And I can't find the origination of this quote anywhere. When, where, why, none of that seems to exist, which makes me think the whole thing's not true.
But, you know, kind of everything that Liam does is kind of funny.
Yeah, examining all this, here's what I think has happened, to your point. I think Bon Jovi said something that was taken out of context about Oasis not being big in the U.S.,
right.
I think that happened. I also think there's a possibility that his camp explored having Oasis play with him in London, and it didn't work out. Now,
yes.
Do I think that Oasis said they suck balls, quote unquote? Probably not. I think that was probably added for color. Because remember, this is at the height of Oasis or Bad Boys lore, right? So that seems to me that could have been added for color. I think the actual bad blood between these two guys is total internet fiction. And it's funny, and it works, because it puts two generations at conflict. So this story is funnier and has more legs, because you're basically launching 80s kids and 90s kids at each other.
Yeah, and it works because, as many message board posters has commented, this type of behavior, quote, sounds like Liam.
And we've seen a recent example of this. Like, what has Liam been doing recently in the press?
Somehow, some way, in addition to Tribe Called Quest, Oasis has been nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So this is, by the way, Tribe Called Quest, super excited they're going to get it. So Liam tweeted, fuck the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's full of bumble clarts.
What is that?
I don't know. Bumble clarts. And adding he doesn't need, quote, some wank award by some geriatric in a cowboy hat. And then there's more.
Fair enough.
Which is great. As much as I love Mariah Carey and all that, I just want to say, do me a favor and fuck off. It's like putting me in the Rap Hall of Fame. I don't want to be a part of anything that's mentally disturbed. Besides, I've done more for rock and roll than half of those clowns on that board, so it's a load of bollocks.
I mean, there you go. That, as the message board posters say, yes, that sounds like Liam Gallagher. What is your favorite Oasis song? Do you have one?
I do like Don't Look Back in Anger, if I have to like one of the bigger ones.
I mean,
like
that whole record is unbelievable.
But I do like Fade Away. That's not a huge single. Mm-hmm. I like that one a lot. Those are the two I think.
How about
like
Cigarettes
best.
And Alcohol?
Yeah.
Live Forever?
I do like it, not as much as my other two.
Acquiesce?
Nah.
Stop Crying Your Heart Out?
Yeah.
You don't like any of the older, the newer stuff? I say newer after like 97 is newer stuff.
And I had to be dragged onto this Oasis train, man.
Did you just, was your problem with Oasis initially just like too Beatlesque, like they're ripping off the good Lords?
Well, there was some of that, and I was in a band, and they had already broke like big like 4 or 5 years before, and people would be like, man, they're better than the Beatles or whatever, and I would immediately have this knee-jerk reaction of like, go fuck yourself, and just not have any interest in Oasis. Because of that, and I guess because a lot of people I knew around me really liked Oasis, and so of course you really want them to like your band more than Oasis. Well, it's just not gonna happen. Not gonna happen.
Well, you know, so there was I threw this in the show notes, but like in 97 there was a period where Paul McCartney was on the record criticizing Oasis. And
yes,
do you remember this? So this is this is from the Irish Times. Again, a lot of this is you know, the press from over there. November 29th, 1997, when Paul McCartney had the temerity to publicly criticize Oasis last month, there was the familiar sound of floodgates opening as other elder rock statesmen, previously scared of appearing unhip, rushed to second his emotion. Now, the first blow had landed, and now one by one, they lined up to floor the undisputed rock champions of the world. George Harrison weighed in by saying, quote, "The music lacks depth and the singer Liam is a pain. The rest of the band doesn't need him." Keith Richards followed up with a punchy, quote, "They're crap," while Mick Jagger hit with, quote, "You can't dance to it. The new album's impossible." And this is Be Here Now, the album that people, you know, sort of famously hate. However, it was McCartney's remark that came as the real body blow, mainly because Oasis had defied and been heavily influenced by, to put it mildly, the songs he'd written with the Beatles. Quote, "They're derivative and they think too much of themselves. They mean nothing to me," he said of the band, who style themselves as the new Beatles.
Yeah.
It's harsh. And I guess that shows up in this documentary. And like this whole story breaks because the band is sitting in a London hotel room watching this new hour-long documentary about them. And it was this independent company had brought it to him. And so it's all these talking heads of like, oh yeah, Oasis, they're amazing. Oasis, Oasis. And then the two Beatles and two Stones saying that stuff. And so immediately their manager, Marcus Russell, is making sure that this documentary does not get out. It becomes a whole thing. And then Liam and Noel go on BBC Radio 1 and start saying they're going to beat all these old guys. That they're going to beat the effing shit out of Harrison, Jagger, Richards, and that other blankety blank. If any of them old farts have got a problem with me, then they should leave their Zimmer frames at home and I'll hold them up with a good right hook. They're jealous. They're senile. If they want to fight, I'll beat them up.
Yeah. So see, I was kind of out. It didn't work for me.
Man, if you've got a question, if you've got inquiry, if you would like to discuss something you've heard and you don't know if it's true or not, you've just seen it on the internet, we'll do the research for you. We don't mind. It's wearethestoryguys@gmail.com. That is the easy way to get in touch with us. And if you like live music and you want to go to one of the biggest rock festivals in the country, it happens to be in our own backyard, literally Murdoch's backyard. It's called Louder Than Life. It happens in September, and the lineup this year just got released. You can find it in the show notes. It's freaking huge. Give us some highlights, Murdoch.
Slipknot, Slayer, Offspring, Motley Crue, Korn, Breaking Benjamin, Five Finger Death Punch, Clutch, Judas Priest, Sum 41, Mastodon, Biohazard, Juliette Lewis and the Licks and Sponge.
Oh my God.
Both their songs from the 90s.
I love that you always mention Sponge when running down that lineup. If you want to get involved in going to that with us, all you got to do is send us an email. wearethestoryguys@gmail.com and tell us about the greatest music festival experience or story that you have. We love telling stories around here. We want you to tell us one. We're going to be giving away wristbands to folks who wow us with their story. Just send it via email. wearethestoryguys@gmail.com. And until next time, Murdoch, what should people keep doing?
Keep telling stories.
Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories is a Story Guys production. The show is produced and edited by Brian Eichenberger. Get more stories, hear more podcasts, and book the guys for your conference or house party at wearethestoryguys.com. Copyright Boy Have We Got Stories Productions. All rights reserved.